bought a new laptop and it's so luxurious. It's like all shiny and has an OLED
Petite.
screen. And so.
Jasmine coming too, or coming?
Jasmine's gonna be. Hey guys.
Hello, I'm joining online. Hello.
Liz.
I'm gonna try to get the.
I can't hear anything.
Well, it looks like Dan muted his computer to get
Oh,
things
thank
set
you.
up.
Okay.
Yeah.
It looks like we have the quorum and are ready to start. I'm Mary Lou Ragomani, Mary Lou Nall in the neighborhood. And I chair this board. Next to me is Elaine Hill.
Briggs Klinko, board member.
Daniel Hill, board
Margo Sackheim, board member.
And then there's two people here. I'm sorry to say I don't know.
Yeah, so I can actually. So I'm Dan Bursick. I'm the planning administrator for Planning and Development Services. We have a couple other people from the city who are here. We have Desiree Aranda, who is our new historic preservation officer. So really excited to have her. So she's going to kind of join and watch in. And then additionally, we have Jasmine Chan, who's an administrator from Parks and Recreation. Who's going to talk a little bit about the replanting of Cottonwood Lane?
Okay, great. Welcome to both of you. If we can take care of a couple of pieces of business first, I'd like to, we had two sets of minutes that we needed to look at and make sure that we agreed to them. So we have Monday, the, oh, oops, I gotta find them, sorry. We have to the draft report on 224. Have you all reviewed it? The only thing that I found that was an error was the address,
That
Dan.
was the address. Okay.
325 instead
3425.
of 5435.
Okay.
Anything else? Can we make a motion then? You approve, Dan?
Motion we approve. Movement
Second.
we approve.
How about the president? You weren't present. Michael?
Still approve.
Oh, I, yeah, I approve.
Can you? And we, I approve. And it says they stand corrected. And I guess there's not a second set, so I apologize. I thought we were doing an older set as well. Good. Okay, so then, Jasmine, if you would like to present the Cottonwood Lane Parks and Rec stuff.
Yeah.
Let me
Dan, would you mind either pulling up the plans or giving me share access?
I
I can
just
share.
made you co-host. You should be able to share.
Yes. All right.
Just real quick going into this, I believe I need to recuse myself from any voting, but am I still able to participate in the conversation? My family is paying for the cottonwood trees.
It's just a courtesy review. There's no action item here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me pull up the planting plan. Oh, okay. Is that showing up on your end?
It is now.
Okay, great. So this is the replanting of Cottonwood Lane using locations where we have existing bubblers. So this has been brought forward as a memorial to Judy Klinko. The original idea was to do this kind of before the end of 2024, but due to some other construction in the park, irrigation was not turned on to this area. So we did not, Parks Department did not recommend putting in new trees at that point. But we are looking at an April 22nd, 8 a.m. planting. There is coincidentally a conference that is going to be taking place for arborists that is located at Fort Lowell Park. So there'll be some activities kind of associated with that conference already happening at this park. And then Arbor Day is April 22nd. So that'll coincide with both that day and also the conference that's located here. So we have 16 locations for new cottonwood trees. Those are kind of indicated in that hexagonal shape along Cottonwood Lane. This is on the eastern portion of Fort Lowell Park and the historic Fort Lowell area. And maintains that kind of readjusted alignment, you know, that happened as associated with the reconstruction of that officer's quarters. That's now the museum. These will be Fremont Cottonwoods. The Klinko family is paying for the trees, and we will have kind of pre-digging all set up and all the irrigation checked out and verified before the planting day itself. Just wanted to, you know, let you all know since you have been really deeply involved with things at Historic Fort Lowell, and just kind of giving you the heads up that this is going in and where the trees are going.
Any questions or concerns? So the plan, does the plan, it looks like there are trees in those spaces. Are there not trees there?
There are not. So it's a little bit tricky to differentiate between what is an existing tree versus a new tree. So it's in slightly more grayscale is the existing tree. So this is an existing tree. This is an existing tree. This one, these I think are two smaller trees. And there's this one kind of towards the front. It's the slightly greener canopy within the hexagons. Those are indicating the new trees. So it's a little bit hard in this plan to differentiate quickly.
How large are the trees going to be that you're
The note that I had received was that these are, let me make sure I don't get this incorrect. The trees are 8 gallon trees, currently 7 feet tall.
Wow.
Yeah. They were found by Damien Klinko over at Mesquite Valley Growers.
And I just am curious. It's not a critique, it's really a question. There's like that one blank space
The
where,
museum.
and that's just the museum. So there's no, I mean, there's no plan to plant anything there or to do anything there.
No, not at this point. And there are other kind of blanks, right? Like this would be a blank. You probably want to put something here to kind of fill out Cottonwood Lane. But because the department doesn't have funding to make irrigation changes, we're going by exactly what's existing currently that would be able to support the trees.
So, can you clarify that? So, wherever there are spaces, like in front of the museum, or
I don't know that we would have put trees right in front of the museum, kind of in this stretch, but I was thinking maybe perhaps there would be one that could fit here. One down here. I think there's a few more. Sorry, I can't even see that part of my screen. Yeah, a couple more spaces closer to that parking lot, east of here as well.
there historically would have been trees in front of the museum.
Okay.
My photos.
Yeah. We can certainly look into that right when we're at that point where we have funding for irrigation and additional trees in this area to see where exactly we would be filling in.
That's my question is, so you're saying there's not existing irrigation in front of the museum?
I'm sure there are irrigation lines, but they haven't, there aren't bubblers that are coming up to the surface in the way there are for the other locations that are indicated here.
Is there a sense of what the cost for getting just a small adjustment to an existing irrigation system would be?
I do not have that cost, no. I do not have that cost, and I don't also don't have kind of the time commitment it would require for staff to do that as well.
But there are other trees, what I said is there are other trees yet, right? That have been purchased.
Yeah, I mean the so Cottonwood Lane from my memory, it was a lined lane. The trees were equally spaced on both sides, and I think we're trying to restore this historic landscaping asset in Fort Lowell Park. It's really the goal, but the avenue does feel like it's getting a little lost with this kind of sporadic placement. And it would be interesting to find out what the cost would be for staff and materials in order to activate the rest of the irrigation system that is clearly present, to activate the rest of the sites. Because I think like this is a really great opportunity. Our neighborhood has a really strong history of planting and stewarding trees and fundraising for them. It doesn't seem like it would be an extraordinary expense given the fact that the infrastructure is already there.
Yeah, and more toward, I'm sure it's different in the right of way once you start to get in the right of way too on the west side.
Well, that the west side of the parade grounds does not have any irrigation to it. So it's a different, you know, a different question than the east side.
No, I'm talking about next to on the east side of Craycroft Road, right? Closer
Oh, you're
to
saying in here?
right in there. Just to promote, and that's really the idea is just to promote
The
the
continuation.
presence, the continuation of the presence of the park, you know, it kind of
Sure.
recognize the park too.
Sure. I can follow up on those. I will say I'm not optimistic that that would happen before April 22nd. But I can certainly ask for the answer and see what we can put into motion now.
Yeah, and if we can just get it into play even, right? Get the information for like a phase two.
Yeah.
Can you clarify where the historic sign marker for Cottonwood Lane is?
I actually don't know that information off the top of my head.
I think it's that little thing all the way to the right. I do too. It's that
Over
it's
here
right over
by
there.
that
Yeah,
parking
I think,
lot.
but I think it's on the other, just below that where you just pointed to.
I mean, in the
See the gate right there?
yeah.
Yep.
It's right next to that gate.
To towards the bottom
To
of
the
this
bottom, yeah.
photo. Yeah,
Gotcha.
that one. And Riggs, is there a plan for a plaque or a signage or something like that for Judy in this? And there's not, that's not being presented, it is.
That would be Damien's work.
Okay. Okay, because that would be something we would want to know about, is if there's a plaque or something going up and where it goes. And my other question about these plants that we're looking at that are already in place, are they all cottonwoods? Yeah, they're
Yeah,
all
along
cottonwoods.
Cottonwood Lane, yeah, they are. I
Along
think those other
Cottonwood.
ones that are just to the north are eucalyptus. Okay,
Yeah.
I just wanted to know that they were all cottonwoods that.
Along the lane, they're all cottonwoods.
Okay.
And back down in the right corner, yes. So I see that there's a new planting, and then is there an there's an existing cottonwood to the left of it? Is that
Yeah,
correct?
I think that one's a pretty small one.
It
Existing
seems
to
to me
the
that it would be better to be infilling the lane than having this one freestanding because the Cottonwood Lane is a historical asset. It's it's not to have like a sense of trees sprinkled out over a distance, but that they're creating a channel.
That's your intro to the channel.
And if they don't have a button, okay. Parking lot, you're stuck with that.
So there's no irrigation in between those two current sites. Yeah, there, where you have the mouse.
Right here. Yeah, we did not find bubblers to the surface from the irrigation line in this location.
That's right. There's no tree. In there. Yeah. I do like that it's coming closer to the parking lot and will be, it's so that it starts, yeah. It's more inviting to look down and see it. But I also agree, these open areas are really a concern. So we would like to maybe work together to see what we can do to make something happen to fill.
Sure. Yeah, air. I'll follow up with our park staff and see what we can do. If anything's possible kind of in the near term, if it's not, then think about what that timeline might look like and that cost.
I think the initial inquiry is, what's the cost that needs to be closed here? And I'm understanding what it would cost to reactivate these irrigation sites.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The trees that are there currently, are they all healthy? Have they all been looked at by an arborist?
So we are, our administrator over parks operations is a certified arborist. He did go out to take a look. We also had a couple of other folks from Tucson Clean and Beautiful on site as we were looking for the irrigation locations. And the conclusion is that the existing cottonwood trees could be doing better. And part of that is where the size of the existing tree wells don't seem to be quite large enough in diameter to allow for the irrigation there to actually penetrate into where the roots of the tree that actually take in water are located. So part of what we're doing here in advance of the planting, as we go in and prepare each of the sites for the new trees, is to pull out the diameters of all of those existing tree wells so that they're at least exceeding the size of the current canopy of those trees.
Are any of the current trees at risk of, that'd be terrible if you plant a bunch of densely, packed new trees and then all of a sudden, you've got gaps from old trees not making it. Right, when those resources are more distributed.
Yeah, that was not a concern from what I heard. So I think it's more like we can address the issues that we think we can address the issues that the existing cottonwoods are experiencing now by increasing that diameter. All of the irrigation lines that are going to existing trees are also working. We verified those at the same time. So we're pretty confident that once we address the issues with the tree well size, that will be okay for the existing trees. But you're right that we should always be thinking about tree succession and what that will look like, especially for Cottonwood Lane, for these places that are kind of historic landscapes.
And then is there a specific management plan for making sure that the bubblers continue to work? Is there somebody who checks that and does that? Because it is something that we know they've lost trees or the trees are in bad shape because the bubblers went down.
Yeah, we don't have a specific management plan for kind of any of our irrigation in parks, but we do rely on our people letting us know. So for example, at Rio Vista Natural Resource Park, not too far away from Fort Lowell, we had planted a handful of new basin areas, landscape basin areas, and we were hearing from community members who visit that park that they weren't seeing that the irrigation was turning on. And so then we had our teams go out and address that issue. So it's more reliable to report the issue than our team of, I think we only have 6 irrigators for our park system of 138 parks. So it's not, we aren't getting around to everything in kind of the cadence that it would be to catch things early enough. So we would rely on you and would welcome the information from you all about what you're seeing is maybe not going correctly.
Will you provide like a schedule or how the timers are going to be for the watering?
Yeah, we can certainly do that. Yeah.
Because that would help if, you know, someone were to walk through there at a time when they might be being watered to check.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can definitely do that.
Yeah, I have a couple other questions. One is a topic that we've been bringing up to parks for quite some time since the museum opened, and that is driving and parking on Cottonwood Lane at the museum.
Yeah.
And we've been asking the museum to not allow that. And I talked to Anne recently, and she agrees we shouldn't be allowing parking and driving on Cottonwood Lane. Friends of Fort Worth Park agrees. Everybody agrees. So that'd be my request, is that we're investing in these trees. We're investing in this historic asset. And we're going to try, I'm speaking now for the Neighborhood Association, not the Historic Board. We're going to try to work to do something about allowing parking to the south of the museum by modifying the roadway. So that's a different project, but it relates to this in the way that we should stop allowing parking on Cottonwood Lane right now. I mean, until we get this plan in place.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I definitely heard about this probably like 6 to 8 months ago and thought it had been resolved. So you're saying it's not been resolved, that the museum still has folks parking up there. Okay.
We're parking every week on
Do you
right
know
in.
if that's museum staff or if that's visitors?
Both, from what I
Both.
understand.
Okay.
And
I'll follow up on that. Because
is
that's definitely not something we had communicated should be a routine thing. It was more of if on occasion they needed to pull in kind of larger materials
right,
to
this,
the museum that they could use that, but
yeah, no,
not as a place for regular visitors or staff to use as parking space, because that is part of the historic area.
okay. And then, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, is that because the gates are open?
The gates may or may not be open. The
And they
gates
go
are
around the
locked.
gates, and they go
No,
around the
no.
well,
They.
they have a key. They have a key for the gate for that, you know, kind of one-off purpose. It was
Yeah,
the kind of
they leave the gates
then.
open.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the other question I have is about archaeology or surveillance, because I know that I asked this question about the Pony Field, and they said there was surveillance. That area hadn't been disturbed, but this area's been disturbed over and over. Does it have to have the same kind of surveillance?
Yes, it does. So this area, the pre-dug holes for each of these trees will go down 3 feet. So we will absolutely be having archaeological monitoring. We are bundling that in with the Pony Field project. So that ASM permit is going to cover kind of all of this activity. So we're not paying kind of in duplicate for that permit, but we are adding on, we're expecting around a day and a half to 2 days of monitoring for that pre-digging activity.
Dan, as a courtesy review, do we still take a vote?
You wouldn't normally take a vote, but we will record your kind of your comments and everything. Yeah.
Any other comments or
Does it
concerns?
go to PRS too for review or no?
It does not, though.
No.
But they are going to be bringing it to the Historic Landscape Subcommittee, I believe, on Thursday. Is that correct?
Thursday. Yep.
Yeah.
What time is that meeting?
Okay. Let me check.
Since we're not going
Yes,
to
yeah,
that meeting, I
exactly.
want to be the
Yeah.
whole thing. Okay.
That is at 10 a.m.
Any other questions?
We're really excited about the restoration of this historic asset. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
I have follow-ups on my end, and if it's all right with you, can I send that in an email follow-up format, or do you want me at the next meeting?
The follow-up about the bubblers and the timing and
And the cotton and all of that, yeah. And then also Cottonwood's in the right of way. And then the irrigation schedule that we anticipate to put into place.
I'm comfortable with a report from you, a follow-up.
Okay.
But if you want to come, we're happy to have you.
Thank you for the invitation. Okay.
Just let us know.
Okay, yeah.
The planting date is, you said April
22nd.
8 a.m. And is everybody, is the neighborhood invited, or is that a...
Anyone is invited, yeah. It's an open planting day. I think Tucson Clean and Beautiful might be leading the kind of volunteer effort for it. I can follow up with them.
Thank you, Jasmine.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Oh, oops. I'm sorry, I lost my agenda. I'll get back to it. Here we go. Discussion about Corbett Ditch and the Mesquite Bosque. There's been some recent controversy about the Corbett Ditch and the Mesquite Bosque behind it. As you know, the Mesquite Bosque is very dry, and we have resisted having neighbors cut the trees that look so dry. And it is owned, that area is owned by Hill Farms. There's a common area, and then the drainage is promised to another landowner down the way. And so I think we just need to talk about it and kind of, we know that there's a push from the Historic Preservation Society with Damien leading that charge to refurbish the Corbett Ditch. But we do want to preserve the Mesquite Bosque because it is a historic landmark in our neighborhood. So I just wanted to, and Elaine backs up on some property that's also historic and in the historic district, and so we just wanted to have conversation about it.
And you did too.
I'm on it too. I'm on the ditch as well, and so we want to be sure that it's all protected. And I, just to raise it, make sure we've got new members. And you used to play in that Corbett Ditch, I bet.
It was running our whole childhood.
Yeah, you guys have all played in it, but. It's really an at-risk area in the neighborhood.
Anything else you wanted to know? There's a meeting set up in April. I think it's the 17th with the utilities for Hill Farm and those Doboske, and other adjacent property owners, just to talk about how to preserve it. I mean, we're going to plant trees or get the water reinstated in the ditch. That would help the trees. The biggest fear among those HOAs is fire. So I was also going to go talk to the fire marshal, but I didn't want to bring them to a meeting because then they'd all get scared.
Yeah. Well, my first question is just, it's winter time. Mosquitoes are generally more dormant. So this is not a great time to...
To look at it?
Yeah, the mosquitoes are the last to arise in the spring. So just... giving them a little bit more wake-up time to understand the health of those trees
right.
as a base point, that we're not there yet in the season.
Yeah, but just to make you aware that, and I've invited Mary Lerman, and basically the stakeholders, representative stakeholders, not a big meeting.
Well, this topic came up in the new subcommittee that was formed, which is untitled at this time, but maybe like, something like a process improvement committee or something. I don't, you don't have an official name.
We're working on it.
Just Dan and I were talking about this tree issue, as well as some other continuous conversation regarding landscaping in the Fort Lowell district. And
so the Bosque was a good example because it sort of brought this to, you know, high alert all of a sudden when, you know, someone was back there trying to cut down trees because they think it's a fire hazard. And this is, you know, Bosques are not, especially now that the water table is lower, they're not these big, you know, super green, super lush forests, right? They're kind of dry forests, they're dry desert forests. And they characterized by low desert scrub, mesquites, you know, they're not going to look like really lush areas, right? So while they may look a little dry, especially in the winter, they're still alive. There's still these ecosystems that are thriving and doing what they're supposed to be doing. Sure, yeah, the water table's lower and there's probably more dry than there was 30 years ago, but you know, there's still a lot going on there. And so, you know, to have that mindset of, oh, we've got to cut these down because there are the fire hazards and there's going to be, you know, this is going to be an issue for the homes around. Well, if anything, cutting them down is going to invite invasive species to come and see there. But, you know, buffalo grass being the biggest example, right? But more to this point is from a historic preservation standpoint is that what do we do if somebody wants to clear cut a bosque, right? In this instance, you know, we got lucky insofar as the people who had hired those folks to come cut those trees didn't have, you know, that wasn't their land, so they couldn't do it. But in future, you know, from a conservation perspective, how do we preserve 200-300 years of ecological history, right? Corbett Ditch is probably the best example. And so that just sort of, that was the start of this, well, the reignition, let's say, of this conversation about what do we do about landscape?
Well, right. I want to add a piece to that, because I can't figure out why that bosque piece that sits on that parcel, so it's to the north of the Corbett Ditch, why it is, it looks so bad, and it looks, I look at it, it looks really
looks a little
distressed. However, the trees on my property, the trees west of me that are on that neighbor's home, and the trees that are west and on the south side of the ditch, they seem to be okay. So there's something that's happening, and I don't know what it is. It's not that everything's been watered. It's not. So that part of the bosque is healthy, pretty healthy looking in comparison. So I don't understand.
It could be. Kind of runoff. I mean, I'm not an ecologist, an arborist, or a, you know, hydrologist, right? But, you know, it could just be as simple as there's more runoff in that area and then it diverts somewhere, or it doesn't quite reach those trees, or it's too dispersed when it reaches those trees, or it runs right by, right? So
because
basically, I'm thinking more of that concrete, you know, area where, you know, the concrete's on the side of the bosque, right? In the Corbett Ditch, if you had runoff flowing through that, and it's not going to stop really, right? It's not going to sit as long there and absorb into the ground. It's just going to run through, run to the wash, you know, run down that little offshoot of the wash all the way into the retail. So.
Would it be worthwhile for us to bring in an arborist to look at that and to look at
and a hydrologist
to better manage the watering of that.
Yeah, whoever, maybe not a hydrologist, but whoever can tell us about, you know, how to control water runoff.
Can look at species environment that may be so
I think that's kind of like a good place for that conversation. Yeah. Is that this meeting, this site meeting that's upcoming, and to talk about where to bring more stakeholders to the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, perhaps the neighborhood association cares about the health of the trees, and
and also I think we need to look back at the if their historic district has any notes about the development of Hill Farm. Why did they preserve it? Why did they leave that there? I mean, they didn't leave it on purpose. It could have been a building lot, right? I mean, built
because they couldn't impact the ditch.
Right.
And the ditch was still running.
Yeah.
And then that.
We should find some. See if we've got any.
See if we've got any.
Oh, look.
Well, I think that the Bosque is a great example, but also, like, literally our previous topic was also just about landscaping in Cottonwood Lane.
Yeah.
And like there was a discussion about maybe putting in an alternate type of tree that was not part of the native landscape or the Fort Bowl historic rural landscape. And landscaping has come up continuously. It was a struggle point in our efforts to update our design guidelines. And from my reading of the code and especially the technical standards manual, which is specific to Fort Lowell, in this instance, it's time to update the code. And I think that that is kind of something that Dan and I talked about in our subcommittee meeting, that the code is not providing for this historic board to have oversight over these important semi-rural landscaping aspects and ecological resources of the Fort Lowell neighborhood. And so from our perspective on our subcommittee, we would like to actually begin the formal process to do this updating of the technical standards manual for the Old Fort Lowell Historic Zone, which is unique amongst the five historic zones in Tucson by being a rural landscape and a deserted space, and that is part of the asset of this historic zone. And I think that's where we are in this process, because we're continuing to bump up with these concerns, and we would like to be operating from a place of preservation, not good faith. And so what will be the next steps to actually be instituting this processes around creating, getting support from the city to get updated language, and then go through our public process review, and then take it to mayor and city council?
So I will say that it's related more to the Unified Development Code and not necessarily technical standards. And so when there's landscaping required, and usually it ends up being when you have like a subdivision or you have multiple parcels that are being developed, there are landscape standards that go along with those subdivisions. It's the one-off that we don't require landscaping for any single family home in the city. And so that would have to be a change to the Unified Development Code that would actually like start that. You could maybe do a cutout for Fort Lowell or something of that sort. You'd have to draft it into the Unified Development Code, but that's where your problem is related to landscaping for single one-off, like single family homes. And that's why you're not seeing that, because we've always been hands off on that. People can, you know, do what they will with their landscaping. They go and plant a tree, they go and plant bushes, they do things of that sort.
More concerned, you know, we don't want to police landscaping at all, right? Like what we're thinking is more along the lines of like, okay, if somebody wants to, like the boat space, again, a great example where, you know, mm-hmm. you're talking about that took 300
it's
years to make that.
Yeah.
Right.
It's on our inventory.
Yeah.
It would be impossible to replace.
Well, totally.
And so, you know, and, you know, surely there are other examples, you know, you could think of where there would be an exorbitant cost to, modify it back to its original state or close to it, mm-hmm. or where it just wouldn't, you know, jive with the neighborhood and everything that we're trying to do with you know, historic preservation generally. You know, one example we thought of was, okay, if somebody wants to, I think this may have been brought up at some point, but let's say, okay, you can't put a big wall in front of your house. Well, I'm going to put a big line of oleanders instead, because I want some. The road blocked, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's not really historically accurate, you know. So similarly, you know, I think this got brought up when we were discussing the plans for the commissary, you know, same sort of deal where there's a desert landscape sort of around the commissary. And how do we, you know, can we rely on the tenants who are going to be there eventually to be good stewards of that landscape? It's hard to say, right? We would want some recourse to be able to say, okay, hey, you can't take out that 200-year-old mesquite tree. You can't, you know, for areas like that, right? And especially where, now, of course, it's going to be different with residential properties,
right,
insofar as only major changes like clear cutting massive amounts of forest or you know, again, putting in a line of oleanders would be something we could potentially, you know, have a standard for, a guideline for. But
can I go back to Dan's comment though? Because I have a question about what you said. I don't understand why we can't update the technical standards manual specific to Fort Lowell. What, this is a normal part. This is, which is within the Unified Development Code. The technical standards manual falls with, it is part of the code. I'm not understanding why we can't go through a process to amend that.
So again, it goes back to what's required from the Unified Development Code. The technical standards is really there in order to provide the technical details related to actually what's required from the Unified Development Code. Mm-hmm. So you need to actually adjust or make your amendments to the Unified Development Code in order to make any of those changes within the technical standards. The technical standards, where it talks about landscaping, is related to projects that have required landscaping, like a landscaping plan. It's not meant to apply to all plans.
That's why we want to have an update. We understand that the code is not providing for what were the needs of this rural neighborhood. We understand. We are at a standstill with the code around the needs of the historic preservation zone.
Yeah,
so. That's why we want to begin an updating process. But to me, it seems like if you're saying that the only way to update the technical standards manual cannot be updated independent of the UDC?
No, it can. I'm just saying if you want to require all single family homes to go through a full landscape review, have a landscape plan.
Your request, okay. We want to do a process to get good policy that will improve the technical standards manual to better reflect this historic zone and its needs as a rural space that is completely unique from the other historic zones. So we're not asking for, we don't know exactly what we're asking for. We need to work in collaboration with professional policy writers in order to have an improved language to achieve the intent and purpose of the historic zoning, which is to preserve this semi-rural streetscape and landscape and neighborhood.
So I'm trying to understand exactly what we're trying to get at. I will say this. Code changes are initiated by mayor and council. It would be something that you would have to get someone from council to champion and then bring it up, and then they would direct staff to make those changes. So changes to the Unified Development Code, changes to the technical standards, that's where you would start doing that, right?
So we jump right to city council in order to make these changes? Because I thought there was a different process provided, but if that's the avenue, we're happy to go that route. Certainly we need support in order to write appropriate language because we're not code writing experts in this room.
Right.
But we do know that we have an outcome issue that is continually impacting the work of this board. So we want to start the process and move forward.
That's probably the predominant question. So if it's the UDC that has to change, right?
I'm not sure if that's it.
So let's just start there. If it's the UDC that has to change,
mm-hmm.
I know we discussed briefly, like a letter to our council representative Paul Cunningham, mm-hmm. As one avenue. I guess what we're asking is that the best avenue, right? Or is there another way that we should try to go about?
Well, I'm trying to understand whether this is a enforcement issue or if it's a requirement issue, like. What I because it's different when someone goes through and makes a couple changes to their landscaping right. on their yard, which is what we've talked about in previous meetings related to landscaping.
Yeah, so
and guess, this is a different issue. Apparently, it sounds like this is a different issue, and this is one of those things to where I think when they came through and got that actual plan approved. Their plat, their subdivision plat, or whatever, there should have been a landscaping plan in there, and they have to still adhere to that landscaping plan. I think.
Well,
I'm not sure.
For which,
are you talking about for the single family residents that were holders in?
Well,
no.
Well, that's, but,
no, but I'm talking about like the Corbett Ditch
and
Mesquite Bosque. Yeah.
So somehow, and they are the only pieces that are in the historic district.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the pieces that were concerned about the pieces in the historic district.
Yeah,
because the Bosque wasn't in the historic district. And though they're trying to reinstate it through the Neighborhood Association on Mesquite del Bosque.
They have it in there. deed restrictions.
And the other thing, though, they have it in their deed restrictions, and that might be something that we look at for the HOA that's behind there. But I also know that we have always, pushed for and required that you plant, cactus in the ground because it's not native to the historic district. It's not in the ground. And that is one of the things that we've always tried to do.
I guess it is more of a review requirement question. So basically, and again, this is only for substantive changes to the landscape, right? Uh-huh. If you're planting, like I said, a row of oleanders in front of an historic house, and it would block that house, the view of that house, you can do that independently.
No, you can't block the view of the historic home.
I still think that's a zoning violation.
It
does ultimately.
The historic homes in this neighborhood. Mm-hmm.
So,
but you can choose to cut down 6 mesquite trees on your property, which would be an inappropriate choice in a neighborhood that is working to restore and preserve part of the historic bosque, which used to run along the entire river. And this happens to be one of the most intact sections in town. But I've noticed from my more than 1 year of service on the board that this is a continued struggle point. And whenever it comes up, it says, this board has no authority to discuss or talk about landscaping unless it's part of a bigger review. Unless it's part of a bigger review for a different structure that is being adapted or built or demolished. And that is not serving this historic board's objective and the goal of this zone. So we want to update the code to better represent what the intent and purpose of preserving the historic Fort Lowell zone is. And the code as it is written does not provide for that kind of oversight, which this neighborhood, maybe more uniquely than the other historic zones, needs.
And you're not wrong. I mean, like, it does kind of get into the weeds as far as, okay, well, how fine grade you go. You say you can't plant the shrub in your backyard, no. Like, you say you can't, trim your mesquite tree, no, of course not, right? But if there's, a feature of the neighborhood, like a 300-year-old mesquite tree that's right on Fort Lowell Road, right? It's like, and it's healthy and you just want to cut it to make a parking space, that's something that maybe we should consider. Right, it's something that we can't get back.
We cannot solve these, how to construct this language in this particular meeting. We need the support of people who can write policy experts and to know that we can work as a team to construct an update to the code that is not micromanaging people doing some gardening in their backyard, but is looking out for the overall picture of the semi-rural landscape that we are trying to preserve here. We don't know the answer for what type of language will provide for that. That's why we need support from people who write policy. We're citizen volunteer board, but we know that the code as it stands is not serving this historic district's goal to be preserving both the cultural and ecological assets that are within our zone.
Yeah, I mean, we can take a look and see. I'm not sure if I totally understand exactly what we're trying to get at, because it sounds almost like, I think we're going to run into some private property issues related to actually like the management and the requirement of people not being able to actually, do what they normally can do on their property. I think there are some concerns and legal concerns related to this. It's something we can look into, and we can come back and we can continue to discuss with you.
The question is, like, right? Who do we talk to just start that?
And is the goal to basically put a prohibition on the removal of all trees? Like, I'm.
That's why we want to work as a team, but like removal of trees is obviously an issue. Not that long ago, 2 saguaros were taken out from the Fort Lowell streetscape. Right now, we had neighbors write in. They had a concern about giant boulders being placed down into this neighborhood. We have hypothetical concerns about oleanders being placed. This is a continuous conversation that is coming up and a point of frustration. And it, there, we are preserving, even if you look at our current technical standards manual related to Old Fort Lowell, it says that the job is to be preserving both cultural and ecological resources of this zone. And we're not able to do that because the code is not providing for review of major landscaping changes.
And so maybe, Briggs, I think maybe your subcommittee, an approach could be if you really outline what you are asking for review about. You're not asking for review for
I guess that's
changes.
Part of what we're saying is we need help defining that.
You know what your end goal is, right?
Well, more or less, but it's like, again, from a legal standpoint, from, you know, sort of a standpoint of what even is.
As it is right now, like, as far as just, you know, landscaping for residential, single family residential, it's different for commercial properties. Yeah. It's different for other things. Yeah. For single family residential, there's no landscaping requirements, and we don't have the ability to regulate that unless it's a situation that ends up delisting a property or something.
Well, actually, right? We got a determination from Corin about
If they go through and they're doing other things on the property that require a review, then we can go through and that can be a part of the review. But to just do a straight ahead requirement for review on landscaping, that's something we don't have landscaping requirements other than when that
happens. Right. That's why we want to change the code. That's why we're saying
but,
that the
but
code,
you need to decide at what
the scope
what level and what scope do you change it? I mean, you don't change it for minor things, but maybe
we can
do
loosely
for identified historic assets.
I mean, for sure, we know that the streetscape is of utmost importance. That is what is the, it is about the public enjoyment of this historic space. So at a bare minimum, we know that the streetscape is part of this conversation, the front facades of the homes that face the public view. At a bare minimum, we know that that is part of the conversation. And from my perspective, the entire zoning is about a special requirement for your relationship with your property owner rights. That's what the zone provides for. That's why we want to adjust the code to update it to better reflect the intent and purpose of the Old Fort Lowell Historic Zone.
I think we can, if that's the best way, we can loosely define sort of what we're getting at as far as, you know, it's, again, going back to the, I think the term substantive change is sort of my, I keep coming back to that, where it's like, if you're really removing a lot of material, right? If you're really cutting out like, oh man, I have a lot of dry trees in my property, you know, let's say it's February and you're cutting 100 mesquite trees.
Yeah.
Well, that's not so good, right? Like that's a big detriment to the neighborhood, especially if you're going to move out in, you know, 10 years and the next owner or the next, you know, folks who are going to enjoy that space don't have the opportunity to do so as it's in its historic state. So, I mean, it's sort of what I likened it to, and Briggs and I were talking in our subcommittee, was if someone wants to put a light fixture on the back of their house, no, they don't need historic review for that, of course. Like, they can, more power to them. However, if they want to build a wall, if they want to do, you know, paving on grade paving, if they want to do something that is would have a substantial cost to reset it to what it was, right, then they need review, right?
Well,
that's
a
more or less
foot wall.
Yeah.
See,
no.
and that's tough.
Yeah,
because
so
that 5 foot wall is just as obtrusive as the 6 foot wall.
So I mean that may be the, you know,
but it's still
so,
but it's changing the streetscape. I think if you started there, it feels to me, and then you go look at the common areas.
Yeah.
I think you guys also need to have an understanding of what the existing requirements are for like NPPO and single family buildings and subdivisions and things like that, because if that's where the code is now, what you're asking is to change.
Yeah, sure. And I think we can help clarify some of those things for you, and we're happy to do that. I will say that a lot of like things like changing landscaping requirements and stuff like that is a pretty significant shift from what we've done with all other development. So it is something that really, when you have policy shifts like that, yeah, it really does require mayor and council to provide that direction to make sure that we make those changes.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why that's how the process goes. I mean, that's why it's important to do that.
I guess our goal today was just to kind of air this again, just as a topic, and see sort of where things went, just because we're trying to. We don't know where to start.
Yeah.
With the Mosquito City and the Corbett Ditch and getting those
and the cottonwood trees.
Yeah.
If we weren't what's going on with cottonwood trees, Jasmine wouldn't have been here.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the Unified Development Code 5.8.9L2 under landscaping. And while there is a sentence that says landscaping may be reviewed in the context of an HPZ review, landscaping alone shall not be considered for HPZ review. Mm-hmm. There's also a lead line that seems to be neglected. There's a other sentence within this part of the code that says plantings and ornamental features shall reflect the historic period of the subject structure. With or without review, it states here that plantings and ornamental features shall reflect the historic period of the subject structure. And to me, it seems like there's being a continuous selective reading of the landscaping code to disacknowledge the first sentence while only focusing on the second sentence. And I think that's part of the concern here too, is that the first sentence needs to be bolstered. And when you choose to own property in historic zone, you are choosing to be part of that historic zone. These are very small geographical areas. I already expressed this at City Council before, and they were in agreement with me. These are very small land masses that we're talking about that have this special zoning. If you choose to be a landowner within this historic zone, then you should be excited about participating in the zone. There's a lot of land all over Pima County that does not have these requirements. If you don't want to participate in these requirements, perhaps you should not speculate in these neighborhoods.
Okay, so what is your next step?
We're going to continue to try and hone in on a more specified list based on the feedback we've received in this meeting.
Is there
I also think that the city, if you could provide some guidance.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
When it's required. Yeah, we can pull out a list and say.
The other question I had was.
Can you email that to us, though?
Yeah, happy to do so. Yeah.
That would be great.
The name of the committee, where the cottonwood trees are going next? Or
the Historic Landscape Subcommittee,
Historic Landscape Subcommittee.
Commission.
Is there a way we could talk with somebody there?
They do have a call to the audience. You could always go to the call to the audience and speak to them.
Would it be worth, you know, sort of understanding that avenue of how that came into being, sort of to get an idea of what our next steps are for our board to be able to do the same thing?
I think they only review public lands, right?
Well, that's what I mean. So at some point, I'm assuming that didn't exist. And there was a process by which they said, okay, well, we probably need a committee that reviews public lands, right? Historic public lands.
I mean, I think what ended up happening was, they had the historical commission, and they created a subcommittee to kind of provide guidance on a lot of that stuff. And so, if you wanted to go and speak to them, you could definitely go and call the audience and kind of let them know what you were thinking and that type of thing. It would be a bad idea.
Is it possible for our subcommittee to communicate with their subcommittee outside the bounds of a meeting so that we can have a more productive work session?
You can ask Helen for coffee.
I'm just wondering, that should be allowed, right?
That should be both. Yeah. Little both.
Our board can interact with their board.
I don't think it causes any open meeting law issues, but I'd have to check and make sure.
Because it's...
I don't think so.
It
depends
so.
On if there's a quorum that's...
There's not.
Yeah, or you're discussing actual items related to it, which I don't think you would be doing.
So you have Dr. Schell and Helen Erickson. Yeah. Pretty open to those kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Things. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to... Thank you.
Sorry, that was...
It was
something,
very...
Something came up in our subcommittee discussion that we should...
Highly related. Good. And... I wanted to also talk about discussion of La Reunion and Fort Lauderdale, because that has always been kind of our big event for the Historic District and the Old Fort Lowell Neighborhood Association. And this year it was an awful lot of work and not very well attended. So I don't know that we need an answer today, but it needs to be something that we think about and make some decisions on, unless you've already got ideas, because it's something that kind of feels like it's just not working. It's not working to pull in the neighbors, and it's not working to pull in the city. And so I don't know if we need to do something different. I don't know. I mean,
so
it's an annual event, and you
sorry,
know how
sorry,
much work it is.
I must have missed. What's the question? Sorry.
Well, the question is, do we disband it? Because it's a lot of work. I mean,
yeah.
it's a tremendous amount of work.
This is only the Neighborhood Association puts on, right?
No, it's the Neighborhood Association Historic District
event, because we do a lot of reunion.
And
okay.
The museum, Fort Lowell Museum, jointly. But it actually started as a historic district event initially,
okay.
because it was in return for some humanities money. It was always considered to be like a gift to the community in return for the support of the
community. I guess they didn't realize we were the ones who had the authority to decide that.
No, I mean, three organizations.
Well, we need to take a recommendation. We have another meeting coming up, and it's, Dan, you know how much work it is,
yeah.
and it's a tremendous a lot of planning. It's a lot of funds that come from the Neighborhood Association.
Yeah.
It's a lot of funding.
It costs $9,000 to put that on this year.
And I mean, it was a nice event, but we think in the past, we've had between 800 and 1,200 people, and we think we had less than 400 this year. And it's such a different event now that the city's involved and the park and Parks and Rec are involved. And it's much more dynamic at that end than it is at the end of what we consider our walking tour. And just moving forward, from the Historic District Board, it needs a new champion, I think, because I think I'm dead in the water with it. So, you know, I don't know what else to do. And, but it is something that I think it is important. I mean, the mayor has attended, our city council members have attended. And I think it's important for that knowledge piece. You know, people come live not far away and say, oh, I never knew there was a chapel here. But we do need to do something different, and maybe we have a different idea of how to present it, a different way, different activities, something else we should do.
Right. I have all kinds of things.
Well, come tomorrow.
Come tomorrow, there is a meeting. Or,
I mean, I would say for my two cents, as far as a board member in this capacity, it's well worth the effort. May not be worth $9,000, but you know, it's well worth the effort insofar as this is a so in the same capacity as A Mountain, Mission Garden, that whole area is sort of a I guess the birthplace of Tucson, right, is what they call it, right? We're kind of, we have a similar history. We're the other side of town, right? We're the other side of that coin. I think that's, you know, starting from, you know, Don Odom's perspective, starting from the deep history from an ecological standpoint, you know, in this side of town. These are all things that I think people have no clue about, and you know, they do for the Base Bay Mountain, they do for Mission Garden, because they're better at advertising and putting on events, maybe, but you know, more frequently. But that's, yeah, I think it has an extreme importance from a historical standpoint. So I would say no.
So don't abandon.
Don't
that's
abandon.
Your, that's your number
that's my
one.
That's my two cents.
Okay. But
just some idea. This is strictly brainstorming. It could be possible that it's time for a reformatting, maybe something that's more like tour group based, like and less wouldn't require the same volume of volunteer hours of all the stations. Something that maybe engages more of the ecological aspects of the neighborhood, which are quite enriched and interesting. And see, you know, if that ditch is running, that's going to be an amazing celebration for our whole community, even though it's in our neighborhood. Getting surface water going in Tucson is a huge victory.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe seeing if there's other, possibly other partners who want to bring some different lenses or views to this part of the land. An idea could be maybe to go every other year so it feels less intensive for the people who are participating the most. I'm curious to know if the cost is primarily for the street closure,
mm-hmm.
and if the city can be a better partner in helping to make that cost more accessible.
They contributed some.
But they did.
And it's the police. They get contributions. But mm-hmm. it was mostly the street closing.
Mostly the street closure. Yeah, so just... it's unclear to me why it would cost $9,000 to close a street for 8 hours, but...
Plus four.
Four, okay. Also, just what kind of promotion avenues are we doing? The newspaper is not really a valid place to promote as your sole promotion. There's a new type of media you may have heard of called social media. Like having social media event spaces that are promoting this and or getting out through the public communication channels that are part of, that are communicating with likely attendees such as KXCI, NPR, social media, from running my own events recently, I do think people are feeling saturated on the digital spaces, and people are coming into my arts and culture event that happens once a month because they're seeing a little tiny postcard on a bulletin board,
mm-hmm.
and just being refreshed, and maybe that would be a better use of funding to pay for flyering. I know you can hire people to do a mass flyer. Oh, you did?
But we did do that, and that was pretty cool too. That
did it work?
People, no, because we didn't have anybody come. But we had, you know, that there was actually somebody to hire to place those
mm-hmm.
in the best spots and stuff. And so, yeah, which was one of the costs, but. A low cost.
I don't just getting creative. Like I wasn't able to attend this year, but I presume the Calvary is still doing their display. Yeah, so like there have
kinds
been
of problems.
They had all kinds of problems.
The reenactors,
not the reenactors, but
the actual army.
The actual
has been reassigned.
Mm-hmm.
The actual Calvary.
They canceled on Tuesday or Saturday, so that didn't influence the attendance because we didn't know that.
Yeah,
we weren't certain until Thursday. So,
a shame. I'm sorry to hear that.
It was, but anyway, just something to think about and think about where we go. I don't imagine it will be abandoned either, but I think we are just looking for some fresh eyes at it and maybe some different things. We really have changed with our partnership with the Presidio. Is it the Presidio?
It's the Fort Lowell Museum.
Fort Lowell Museum.
Yeah.
And that, because they have a lot of social media.
Right.
And so they do a lot of that. But we are looking to see what else we can do, because we believe that it is a good avenue for promoting, to get somebody to listen to us about it. It's a rural neighborhood. They need to come in and see. You know, and that is one of the charms of the neighborhood. So anyway, just keep it on your radar. Take your subcommittee and look at that too, because it's really important.
Yeah, I'm just going to keep going because you're soliciting ideas. Is there an opportunity to have a certain amount of it be more like a self-guided tour? Like it many of these sites are presenting the same information related to that type year after year, and how can we just reduce the volunteer burden, which is so enormous? And I know the year before we felt shorthanded. I presume that happened again this year.
Yeah, they let people in the house.
I heard
by accident, but it was a lot of apologies. But yeah, the problem is that it is self-guided, I think, and I think your idea about perhaps more tour-based is a good idea, because it is. I mean, there is a map. There's all this stuff.
Yes, the map.
Tell me again.
You need a Fort Lowell app where somebody can listen to
an audio,
an audio tour while they go, like the one that goes out in Mount Lemmon, right? You can,
like a flag that says this is the spot. There's no open door.
I tell you, you can get an app made for probably less than $9,000. So.
So keep it on the radar. Keep it on the radar. Margo, any ideas from you?
No, you've touched on some that I would have said every other year do it, but I like the idea of doing a self-guided audio tour, or even if you had little signs with that QR type thing where, you know, you could get a page that would pop up with info.
And maybe we can undo some of the printing costs, because everybody's now carrying a format in which they can
download the map.
Or, just alleviate the costs and the burden of doing the printing. Mm-hmm. That is a huge...
Actually, that's a great way to advertise, with QR code at a stoplight. I mean, if you just have to pique their interest with a sign and have a QR code at the bottom, and they just like, oh yeah, look at that. They drive away with their link in hand.
So it automatically goes to Google Calendar. And they get it right into their books on the flyers. I do find that I'm struggling to get people to enter my programming into their calendars, and then they're always reaching out and saying, I forgot that happened. Y'all use calendars, use them for events that you want to attend, not just for meetings.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great.
Thanks. Yeah. We'll convey your feedback.
Definitely. That's great. Great. Okay. So I don't have a nomination for a new member. Does anybody else? Okay.
I think that happened last time. It just maybe didn't get deleted from when it got copied over.
It would be great to find someone, though.
yes, there is someone. Shelby.
Shelby?
Yeah. I can't nominate her. But
is she interested?
Yes.
Yeah, I believe she came up to me at Judy's gathering and said that she's ready to get back on the board or close to.
I talked to her. And she's never been on our board, but it's new to the neighborhood.
And do you have contact information for her?
Yeah, I have.
Would you be willing, since she spoke to you, would you be willing to contact her and see if she's really interested? And
I don't think I spoke to her based on what Elena said, but another potential member also had approached me, somebody who I believe has participated in the neighborhood over a longer period of time.
The neighborhood, but not the historic district, right?
Yes, but they were talking about coming on this board. But this is, you're saying somebody
Shelby is
the neighborhood.
Just moved in a year ago, probably.
Awesome. Yeah. Really do they good. Want to be nominated?
Good, isn't it? Yeah.
Today and start that
no,
process?
No, we should talk to
them. Okay.
In a formal way.
Okay. Because it takes a while to go.
Yeah. But it's good to. Well, Dan did it pretty fast.
Still
okay. There is an anthropologist in San Miguel.
That's Shelby.
When? In San Miguel?
No, in Los Angeles.
It's Shelby. Mm-hmm. In San Miguel, it's Wynn.
Oh,
Winifred,
okay.
Someone. And I will talk to her. I'm not sure what her interests are. Okay. Any thoughts to the audience? I don't think so. We don't have any audience except you, Elaine. Anybody else?
And I was already calling out. So.
Anything else from anybody?
Yes, I wanted to know what's going on with the design guidelines. Did they get implemented while I was away, or
No.
Yeah, so they were supposed to be on the Thursday meeting. Thursday meeting got really busy
PRS.
for PRS, so it's pushed back to the 10th, where there's some more time so they can actually spend some time with it. So they'll be PRS will be hearing it on the 10th
Of this month,
of
April. Of
April.
April.
Yeah,
Okay.
yes, it's coming up.
It's
Yep.
coming. So
Yep.
it'll be 4:10 or
4:10 or 4:20, yeah,
4:20.
depending, but yeah, I
Okay.
think.
And are they in a position to approve them on that day? Is that, are we closing in
That's
like that?
part of the reason why we want to make sure that they don't have a whole bunch of other big items is to give them the time to be able to make the comments and review everything. So that's part of the reason why it ended up being pushed back a little bit. But they will make, yeah, they can make a recommendation if they feel ready to do so. Yeah.
And everybody is welcome to be observing that PRS meeting.
We can't have a quorum.
We can't have a quorum.
We could
So you
observe
can't.
online, couldn't we?
Can't.
On
Okay.
Zoom?
I don't think so. You can't have a quorum with.
We wouldn't be
You
a quorum. We'd be watching in
you're
our own
technically
living
attending
rooms.
the meeting though
Yeah.
if you're signed in.
So we could also just notice it if you
I
want
just
to. If
say
you all want to join, I could
it
just
could be
notice it and
just
then
in
you can
case.
go. Yeah.
That way we don't have to be like one too well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
If
yeah. So yeah, when we get that set up, we'll just go ahead and notice it and then.
we have members, will that increase our quorum size?
Yes.
It
So,
would,
like,
yeah.
that would allow our subcommittees for to have more people potentially if we have more members. Awesome.
Margot, would you be able to also attend the PRS meeting on the 10th or the 24th? And I think they're typically at 11.
Another one on
At 1
Thursdays.
on
One
Thursdays.
after, yeah.
Probably because that would be 3 my time.
Okay. 3 your time?
Yeah, it's a 2-hour difference. You guys don't.
We don't change. Okay. Okay. So we'll keep you informed as to that
Okay.
participant
All right.
attendance. And if everybody is thinking they want to be part of this, then we would go ahead. And I think for either date, go
Okay.
ahead and make it an open meeting for the Fort Lowell
Okay. Sounds
Historic
great.
District.
We
Yeah,
can do
you
that.
can do that, or do I need to do
No,
something?
we'll go ahead and do that. We'll
Okay.
make sure we notice that.
Everybody's off. Cool.
And I'd just like to take a moment to alert the board that I'll be off-grid camping at our next meeting. So I'm sorry that I'm just doing a little traveling, taking a little time off from work
So you
following my
won't be here
mom's
on the
passing. So
24th.
I will not, I have the 28th as our next one in April.
Yeah, but you'll be here on the 24th.
You'd be here the 24th of April.
No, I am will be off grid and will not have internet access. Yeah, I will be back for the May meeting though.
The May meeting, but not the April meeting. Okay.
First, I don't have the June dates. June.
It's the fourth. It's the fourth Monday.
One, two, three, four. Oh, yeah, here it is. Probably be able to zoom in for that one. Yeah.
Cool. Anything else? Desiree, do you get feedback or anything, or anything you'd like to tell us?
Well, thank you so much. I learned so much already, and it's great to meet you all. I'm hoping to meet you in person at the next one. Today is my very first day, so I didn't quite make it out there. Just getting set up and settled in. But yeah, I'm excited to learn more. And yeah, I still have to kind of get caught up to speed on everything, but I learned a lot already. So thank you. And then yeah, I would love to go out and, I've never been to Fort Lowell, so I'd like to go and see it as well and just get a better sense of the place.
It's semi-rural, sorry. Anytime, and we'll be happy to give you a private.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Has the city published your bio online yet if we want to read it and hear about your background?
Yeah, I don't think so. But yeah, I can, just introduce myself briefly. prior to this was working with the City of Phoenix Historic Preservation Office as a senior planner, preservation planner. And I've also worked with the city and county of San Francisco as a preservation planner, their planning department. Worked in consulting and a nonprofit preservation advocacy as well. I also am involved with a national organization called Latinos and Heritage Conservation, which I co-founded along with some friends and colleagues back in 2014. So yeah, I'm an advisor to the National Trust for Historic Preservation. So I appreciate, you know, people who volunteer on preservation boards and organizations. So yeah, looking forward to working with you all and meeting you.
Thank you. We're excited to have you on board.
Thank you. Me too.
Very much. Welcome.
Appreciate that.
You know, Dan's pretty good at his job. We've enjoyed working
yes.
with him.
That's awesome.
I've enjoyed it as well. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Great, thank you. Okay. Meeting adjourned.
All right.
Yep.
Your boss.
Yep. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.